Okay, and welcome everyone to another Tuesday afternoon. I am Stephen Roberts, and this is Cancel the Cabal on Shake and Wake Radio and PSN Radio, SoFlo Radio, Southern Florida Radio, and now once again EPGN Radio. Thanks to Robert getting the stream back up and the website back up. And I could always pick up some more stations. That would be nice. Maybe get my own sometime. Along with Shake and Wake. And he keeps telling me that this is my station too. So, doesn't really matter. I've always thought about having my own station too, anyways. But, yes, I'm going to continue reading on The Truth About Contagion. Exploring Theories of How Disease Spreads by Dr. Thomas Cowan. And as always, all of the stations are listener-supported, so please help out if you can. That's right. Another sister station. Brother station, whatever. Diets based on vegetable oils or even olive oil often lead to cravings for refined carbohydrates. A return to animal fats is the first step to resolving the need for refined carbs. Yeah, and not just animals that are farmed by big farms either, small farms. That would be the best. The embrace of plant-based diets, whether vegan, vegetarian, or just low in animal products, is another trend that contributes to nutritional starvation. Although some people report improved health when they embark on plant-based diet, deficiencies will develop over time. The decision to avoid animal products often comes with resolutions to eat better, in general, and avoid processed food. Removing sources of vegetable oils, white flour, and refined sweeteners from a diet is only part of the process for regaining good health. The other part requires the consumption of nutrient-dense food. Although plant foods have a definite role to play in human diets, they are far less dense in vitamins and minerals than our animal foods. It's okay, Annie. Long-term vegetarianism, especially veganism, often results in deficiencies of complete protein, the fat-soluble vitamins A, D, K2, vitamin B12, lost my spot already. Okay. B12 and four key minerals, zinc, sulfur, iron, and calcium. On the other hand, plant foods like beans, nuts, and grains tend to be high in copper. And a high copper to zinc ratio can dispose one to electromagnetic sensitivity. Lack of iron, of course, leads to anemia and fatigue. Sulfur supports mechanisms for oxygen transport in the blood. Both zinc and sulfur supplementation seem to help COVID-19 patients. Best sources of are animal foods like red meat, liver, and egg yolks. Vitamin A from animal fats and liver helps ensure the iron goes into the red blood cells where it is needed, and that all minerals are used efficiently. The body has a harder time using iron added to processed foods like breakfast cereals, and white flour. So it ends up in the soft tissues where it does not belong. So-called toxic iron, rather than in the bloodstream where the iron in the red blood cells carries oxygen to the tissues. COVID-19 and zinc deficiency have many symptoms in common. Cough, nausea, fever, pain, abdominal cramping, diarrhea, loss of taste and smell, loss of appetite, fatigue and apathy, inflammation, and decreased immunity. Zinc-rich foods and even zinc lozenges provide real protection against this disease. One effect of 5G seems to be the stimulation of calcium channels in the cell membrane. This drives calcium into cells, essentially poisoning the cell, while lowering the ionizable calcium in the blood. The ionized calcium in the blood is used in the coagulation pathways to help clotting and prevent uncontrolled bleeding. If it drops too low, people hemorrhage. During the 1918 pandemic, many doctors noted that their patients died from hemorrhage, not pneumonia. Some doctors reported that IV calcium lactate kept people from dying. Soon after, Royal Lee from the Standard Process Company formulated a flu product called Congaplex, which contaminated calcium lactate. The same form of readily available calcium is in raw milk. Yeah, raw milk. That's why they boil all the calcium and all the other nutrients out and then put fake vitamins and minerals in. Synthetic. That's why they've been doing that for about the last 60, 70 years. 50 or 60 years anyways. In addition, raw whole milk from pastured cows contains compounds that strengthen the immune system and help us deal with stress and EMFs, and probably the bones and other things. The greatest tragedy of the germ theory has been its application to milk, nature's perfect food. Today, most milk is subject to pasteurization. In fact, most milk is ultra-pasteurized, a process that flash heats milk to 230 degrees Fahrenheit, way above the boiling point, ostensibly to rid milk of harmful germs, but actually to lengthen shelf life. Unfortunately, pasteurization greatly lowers the vitamin content. One dairy industry study found that pasteurization resulted in lower amounts of all B vitamins, especially B2, B6, and B12. And these were studies of milk that was merely pasteurized, that is, heated to 170 degrees. It's likely that ultra-pasteurization results in the destruction of up to 100% of the vitamins in the milk. The minerals will remain, but the enzymes the body needs to assimilate these minerals are destroyed. Pasteurization destroys beta-lactoglobulin, which is needed for the intestinal uptake of vitamins A and D. Pasteurization is the name of the germ theory that resulted in the destruction of most of the goodness in milk, a prime food of growing children in Western culture. Pasteurization also renders milk proteins allergenic. Many people with milk allergies turn to milk made from almonds, peas, oats, or soy, which have dubious nutritional value. Raw whole milk, especially from grass-fed animals, is a complete, easily digestible food. It contains every nutrient that babies and children need for growth. It protects them from asthma and respiratory illness. It ensures plentiful calcium that is readily assimilated for strong teeth and bones. For the elderly, raw milk is equally nourishing. It protects the bones and nourishes the tissues, even when the digestive fibers have waned. Raw milk is an excellent source of glutathione, a compound our bodies need for detoxification. Only glutathione from fresh denatured whey proteins will work. That means raw milk. That means from raw milk, not from pasteurized milk or whey powders. Alexei Polinovkov of Kursk State Medical University proposes that glutathione deficiency is exactly the most plausible explanation for serious manifestation and death in COVID-19 infected patients. Raw milk can be of immense help for protecting us from this disease. Another important source of nutrients missing from modern diets, gelatin-rich bone broth made from the bones and cartilaginous portions of the animal, which nourishes the cartilage in our own bodies, and our bodies contain more cartilage than muscle. Bone broth is rich in glycine, an essential element in collagen that helps maintain structure, structured water types of lung surfactants and throughout the body, and it supports detoxification. Animal feet, heads, bones, and skin did not go to waste in your grandmother's kitchen. They were thrown into a pot and simmered on the back of the stove to make a rich broth, basically melted cartilage. This broth then formed the basis of nourishing soups, stews, sauces, and gravies, or given as just a mug of broth for optimal energy and good digestion, a much better choice than coffee. Unfortunately, the food... Uh-oh, Annie. Look out. You better go get some of that stuff. Unfortunately, the food industry has figured out a way to imitate homemade broth. The broth-based gravy that your grandmother served appears in imitation form as a kind of goop made with water, a thickener, artificial colorings, and artificial flavorings, especially monosodium glutamate, a neurotoxin. MSG appears in many canned and dehydrated soups and stews, bottled sauces, broth in aseptic containers, salad dressings, seasonings, mixes, soy foods, which are intrinsically bitter, and even vegetable oils, rarely labeled. MSG is a neurotoxin, not a nutrient, and another source of starvation for those who consume mostly processed food. Another important component of traditional nutrient-dense diets is fermented foods and beverages. Raw fermented foods supply beneficial bacteria in the intestinal tract, preferable on a daily basis. These bacteria help digestion, liberate minerals, break down anti-nutrients, supply vitamins, especially B vitamins, and protect us against toxins. In fact, a recent study links fermented vegetable consumption to low COVID-19 mortality. Fermented condiments like raw pickles and sauerkraut, fermented sauces like ketchup, and fermented beverages like kefir and kombucha, however you say that, are critical components in the diet that truly nourishes and protects. Unfortunately, the modern diet replaces raw fermented condiments with canned versions, makes heat-treated ketchup loaded with additives and promotes truly toxic and heavily sweetened soft drinks instead of artisanal fermented beverages. The public first learned about the benefits of lactic acid producing bacteria in fermented foods, especially fermented milk products like yogurt, from bacteriologist and Nobel Prize winner Ilya Mechnikov. Ilya Mechnikov, a contemporary of Louis Pasteur. Mechnikov is credited with discovery of macrophages, which turned out to be the major defense mechanism in our innate immune system. He proposed a theory that white blood cells could engulf and destroy toxins and bacteria, which met with skepticism from Pasteur and others. At the time, most bacteriologists, always assuming that natural processes are detrimental, believed that white blood cells ingest pathogens and then spread them further through the body. Unlike Pasteur, who believed that all bacteria were bad, Mechnikov credited the good health and longevity of Bulgarian peasants to their daily consumption of fermented yogurt and the lactic acid-producing bacteria it contained. Mechnikov, a colorful and passionate figure, twice attempted suicide, the first time by an opium overdose and the second time by injecting himself with the spirochet of relapsing fever akin to malaria. He concluded that it was his habit of eating Bulgarian yogurt that protected him against the spirochet toxins and allowed him to survive. He also experimented on himself and others by drinking cholera bacteria during the 1892 cholera epidemic in France. He and one volunteer did not get sick, but another volunteer almost died. He then discovered the same microbes hindered the cholera growth, whereas others stimulated the production of cholera toxins. He concluded that the proper cultivation of intestinal flora could protect against deadly diseases like cholera. We get these protective bacteria on a daily basis when we eat lacto-fermented food. An important component of fermented foods and vitamin C. Successful treatments for COVID-19 cases included large doses of vitamin C, oral or IV. Your best dietary source is fermented veggies like sauerkraut. Ugh, I hate sauerkraut. Which is many-fold richer in vitamin C than fresh cabbage. The food processing... Well, it's probably because of the vinegar. I don't know. The food processing technology that accompanied the industry revolution has allowed us to ruin just about every common ingredient that we put into our mouths, even salt. Salt is a critical nutrient for health, and especially for maintaining the difference in electrical potential in our tissues, which can protect us from EMFs. But modern processing removes all the magnesium and trace minerals from salt, and it adds an aluminum compound that prevents clumping. Huh. So your salt will pour when it rains. The solution is to use unrefined salt on your food and in your cooking. Salt that contains a wealth of trace minerals and provides us with daily source of magnesium. One in 1 and 1 half teaspoons of unrefined salt. The minimum adult requirement for sodium and chloride actually provides about twice the minimum adult required for magnesium. Now take your diet of processed food, your frozen dinner, your canned soup, your carry-out meal, and your leftovers, and zap it with a microwave. Little that nourishes will be left in such food-like substances. The impression created in numerous books and in the media that is that healthy diet is dry and unsatisfied, containing skinless chicken, breast, lean meat, vegetable juices, and rough whole grains could not be further from the truth. A healthy diet requires no sacrifice in taste and satisfaction, only care in purchasing and preparing our food. Rich whole raw dairy products, including plenty of butter, fatty meats, natural bacon, and charcuterie. What? Charcuterie. C-H-R-C-U-T-E-R-I-E. Charcuterie. I don't know how to say that word. Eggs, especially the yolks. Artisan sourdough bread. Genuine bone broth, satisfying sauces, natural sweeteners, plentiful unrefined salt, interesting condiments, and refreshing fermented beverages. These provide the kind of diet that truly nourish and protect, and they are becoming more and more available commercially. If your diet contains mostly processed foods, you can be assured that your body is in starvation mode, especially if you heat up your food in a microwave oven. For practical suggestions on adopting a nutrient-dense diet, we use Appendix C. Chapter 10, Toxins. In Chapter 3, we looked at some of these toxins that cause disease, mistakenly attributed to microbes in times past. Those dwelling in cities and towns lived in constant danger of exposure to poisonous gases from sewage and manure. Volatile compounds like hydrogen sulfide, ammonia, methane, esters, carbon monoxide, sulfur dioxide, and nitrogen oxides can kill people through asphyxiation when they are exposed to high concentrations. Other effects include eye irritation, nausea, and breathing difficulty. Our ancestors were also exposed on a daily basis to dioxins and other toxins and smoke from fires built for warmth, cooking, and metalwork. Even today, smoke from cooking fires is a major source of air pollution in the developing world, especially smoke from open fires inside houses and huts. Our ancestors also had to contend with toxic metals, lead used in pipes, cooking vessels, building materials, and cosmetics, arsenic used in metal alloys, cosmetics, and medical treatments, and mercury used in ointments and medicines. Cosmetics, metal amalgams, and silver mining. Although today we recognize the extreme toxicity of these substances, they have not gone away, especially arsenic. Contamination of groundwater with arsenic is a problem that affects millions of people across the world. Heavily used in insecticides in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Arsenic use in produce production is no longer common, except in cotton farming. However, its use is as a feed additive in poultry and swine production, especially in the United States. Well, that's awful nice. Arsenic gets in the arsenic in the meat. That's awful nice. Has increased. For example, an arsenic contained feed additive called roxarsone is used by about 70% of U.S. poultry growers. The first edition of the Merck Manual featured many mercury-based medicines. A toxin containing mercury constituted the standard treatment for syphilis, the classic example of a deadly medicine far worse than the disease it was designed to treat. Use of mercury in medicine has declined, although some over-the-counter drugs, including topical antiseptics, stimulant laxatives, diaper rash ointment, eye drops, and nasal sprays contain mercury compounds. Yeah, that's it. Put it right straight to the brain. The main medical uses for mercury today are in dental amalgams, which constantly outgas mercury as the mouth and sinus cavities into the mouth and sinus cavities, and as a vaccine preservative called thimerosal. Okay, didn't want to run over too much there, so find a pen and mark my spot. Take the first break here, everyone. Okay, let me see. I guess about a 5.5 minute break, everyone.
You could see what I once was if you could go with me back to where I started from. Then I know you.
Okay, and we're back after the first break there. After studies showing that the amount of mercury in the childhood vaccination schedule recommended by the CDC exceeded all national and global maximum safety limits, public pressure forced manufacturers to remove thimerosal or reduce it to trace amounts in all U.S. vaccines recommended for children 6 years of age and under. But manufacturers did not remove mercury from the multi-dose vials of the inactivated flu vaccine, which is given to pregnant women, children under the age of one, and of course adults. The result is that if the flu vaccine is added to the child's vaccine schedule, he is likely to get more mercury in his bloodstream than he did before the removal of thimerosal from the other childhood vaccinations. Small amounts of mercury residues from the manufacturing process still remain in most vaccines. The industrial use of mercury has declined, but it is still an ingredient in some measuring instruments, and it fills fluorescent lamps, including those compact bulbs that are largely replaced to incandescent light bulbs. If they break in your house, you and your family will be exposed to toxic mercury fumes. If they break in landfill, the mercury will pollute the soil and groundwater. Cyanide compounds are a byproduct of many industrial processes, such as oil refinery and the production of polyurethanes. Many cyanide compounds are toxic. They can prevent the production of ATP needed for energy making processes, particularly affecting the central nervous system and the heart, leading to hypoxia, oxygen deprivation, a common symptom of COVID-19 illness. Cigarette smoke is an undisclosed source of cyanide compounds. Humanity is also exposed to formaldehyde, benzene, cadmium, phthalates, fluoride, and chloride compounds in drinking water, including chloramines, preferred by public water agencies because they persist and do not break down over time, and a host of pesticides, including highly toxic. Chlorinestrase inhibitors, nervous system poisons, sprayed on citrus fruit. They make their way into milk, butter, yogurt, and cheese via citrus peel, cake feed to dairy cows. Toxins in food range from propylene glycol and antifreeze added to ice cream. Oh, that's nice. That's so nice. To keep it soft and creamy. Formaldehyde and methyl alcohol, breakdown products of the artificial sweetener aspartame. The artificial sweetener acesulfame K dough conditioners, artificial colorings and flavorings, including MSG. Preservatives, artificial vitamins, including beta-carotene, and chemical antioxidants like butylate. I'm not even going to try to pronounce this, these two words. But it's BHA, whatever that is. Propyl Galate and Tert. Ugh. Some of these words. BTHQ. Somebody wants to look that up. BTHQ and BHA. You can do that for me if you'd like. Which are added to vegetable oils and fried foods such as potato chips. Those with pre-existing conditions like diabetes, obesity, hypertension, and heart disease, those who are most vulnerable to the illness attributed to coronavirus, are likely to have developed these conditions in large part due to processed foods loaded with these additives. How much they contribute to this disease is impossible to say, but it is reasonable to speculate that processed foods containing these and other chemicals play a role as cofactors in the coronavirus illness. Indeed, in any disease, the standard American diet not only starves our tissues, but it also poisons them at the same time. Yes, so nice of them, Annie. Researcher Stephanie Seneff, PhD, has pointed out that fact that the early epicenters of COVID-19 correspond with areas of high air pollution. Wuhan, China, the tri-state region, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Northern Italy, Spain, and Jefferson Parish, Louisiana, and particularly with use of biodiesel. She notes that the Harvard Institute for Public Health study found a strong correlation between exposure to particulate air pollution and COVID-19 deaths. The researchers found that an increase of any one microgram per cubic meter in fine particulate matter was associated with a 15% increase in the COVID-19 fatality rate. It bears repeating that atmospheric dust, that is pollution, can exacerbate exacerbate. Exacerbate. I thought it was exasperate. Oh well. The effects of EMFs. Sunef notes that New York relies heavily on biodiesel fuel for public vehicles, and New York State has a large number of manufacturing plants where biomass from various sources, including used cooking oil, is processed into biofuels. The state also encourages the use of biofuel for home heating oil. Biodiesel and biofuel made from plants contain the herbicide glyphosate, which Sunef believes is the unique mechanism of toxicity. She points to the case of a mechanic who tried to clean a clogged applicator for a glyphosate-based herbicide using a bucket of diesel fuel and a solvent. He quickly developed a bad cough and started coughing up blood. Rushed to the hospital, he was diagnosed with pneumonitis, an inflammatory disease of the lungs caused by exposure to toxic substances. Sunef postulates that the organic molecules in diesel fuel enhance the uptake of glyphosate in the lung cells by acting as a surfactant. Glyphosate substitutes for the amino acid glycine found in cartilage, numerous enzymes, and important lung surfactants, leading to a myriad of problems, including lung disease. Sunef points out that many U.S. COVID-19 hotspots include major ports such as Seattle, Los Angeles, New Orleans, Boston, New York. She notes that air pollution from ships is more toxic than air pollution from land vehicles because ships use the lowest grade of diesel fuel. In Europe, over 20% of automobiles are powered by diesel fuel versus 2% in the United States. Unable to keep up with the demand for diesel fuel, Europe imports biodiesel made primarily from GMO Roundup Ready soy from Argentina. The Chinese produce biodiesel from canola, which is highly sprayed with Roundup, much of which grows along the Yangtze River, which cuts through Wuhan. In the United States, three cities have adopted biodiesel for vehicle use on the roads. New York, which powered 11,000 vehicles at least partially on biodiesel as of 2017. New Orleans, which uses biodiesel in buses, and Washington, D.C., all COVID-19 hotspots. All crops used for biodiesel in the United States are Roundup Ready crops sprayed with glyphosate, corn, soy, canola, and hardwood trees. Aviation biofuel is another potential source of airborne glyphosate, first introduced by United Airlines and now in use by at least four airlines. Using New York City airports. The New York borough most affected by coronavirus is Queens. On the flight paths of New York's three major airports, LaGuardia, JFK, and Newark, and intersecting by three major interstate highways, I-278, I-495, and I-678, in Britain. I'm not sure what this... There's something here. News reports have singled out bus drivers and people living in the town slow adjacent to Heathrow Airport of being especially affected. Test flights and commercial flights running on aviation biofuel blends have been flying into and out of Heathrow since 2008. On the ground, the Mayor of London reported in July 2017 that about a third of the city's nearly 10,000 buses were running on 20% blends of biodiesel. The mayor also stated that by 2018, London would no longer add pure diesel double-deck buses to its fleet. Taiwan has a low rate of coronavirus deaths. Taiwan cities have plenty of air pollution, but not from biofuels. Taiwan vehicles do not use biodiesel. In May 2014, the state-run oil refinery company started phasing out biodiesel fuel production because, due to the island's high humidity, even a 2% biodiesel blend resulted in the growth of microbes that clogged fuel tanks. One New England hotspot was Chelsea, Massachusetts, where much biofuel is produced. As of May 1, 2020, Chelsea ranked number one in Massachusetts with a 363 cases per 10,000 people. Brockton, the number two city, had only 185 cases per 10,000. Glyphosate exposure comes not just through the air, but in our food. Exposure is highest in the United States, which uses the most glyphosate per capita of any country. Senef attributes the high rate of many chronic diseases, including diabetes, obesity, fatty liver disease, heart disease, celiac disease, inflammatory bowel disease, hypertension, autism, and dementia to glyphosate exposure. In 2014, landmark study, Swanson and co-authors showed that many of these chronic diseases are rising in the United States population, exactly in lockstep with the rise of glyphosate usage, particularly on wheat, which is sprayed with glyphosate shortly before harvest as a disiccant. D-I-S-I-C-C-A-N-T. Disiccant. Not sure what that is. Whether ingested in food or breathing and from biodiesel, the effects of glyphosate are insidious, cumulative, and widespread, according to Senef's glyphosates. Hang on a second here. Turn the page before I get to this part and hold it. Mechanism of toxicity has to do with a proposed ability to mistakenly substitute for the coding amino acid glycine during protein synthesis. This is plausible because glyphosate is a glycine molecule, except that there is an additional attachment, a methanol phosphonyl group, to the nitrogen atom of glycine, which changes the size and chemical and physical properties of the molecule, but does not prevent it from incorporating into a peptide chain. It can't be predicted that certain proteins will be affected in a devastating way if glyphosate should substitute for particular glycine residues, known to be very important for their proper function. I have found that many of the diseases with rising prevalence can be explained through glyphosate substitution in specific proteins known to be defective in association with these diseases. Starved and poisoned, the typical American soon develops one or more chronic diseases and seeks medical advice. Once in the clutches of the medical establishment, he becomes a target of more toxins, starting with statin drugs. The list of side effects from statin drugs is long and includes muscle pain. Oh, that's nice. Muscle pain, cramps, fatigue, fever, memory loss, confusion, t- diabetes, kidney and liver damage, heart failure, and digestive disorders, which I have all of. Most seriously, statins diminish the cholesterol availability to cells and diminish the fat-soluble vitamins and other nutrients that are carried in the lipoproteins. With statins, your cells are starved of the nutrients they need to produce energy and keep your intercellular water organized. A Wenzhou Medical University study found that COVID patients had significantly lower cholesterol levels than controls. In addition to statins, most Americans take other drugs. A study published by the Mayo Clinic found that 70% of Americans take at least one prescription medication, and that 20% of Americans are on five or more medications. These include metformin, that's what I'm on, to lower blood sugar, blood pressure medications, including ACE inhibitors, which act on the same receptors as exosomes, steroids, antiepileptics, antidepressants, pain medications, stomach acid inhibitors, and antibiotics. Many who take one or more over-the-counter drugs such as Tylenol, cough suppressants, sleep aids, and antacids. All these drugs have side effects, which means that all of them can act as poisons in the body. The side effect of ACE inhibitors, blood pressure-lowering drugs, such as lisinopril, are similar to those of COVID-19, a dry persistent cough. That's what I had. I was on lisinopril for a while. Had a dry cough, dizziness, possible nausea, headache, and trouble breathing. Didn't get the headaches, but didn't really get the nausea either, but I had trouble breathing and persistent cough, dry cough. A final toxin, one that highly impacts our response to electromagnetic radiation, is aluminum. With an electrical conductivity only slightly less than that of copper. In fact, there are few more biologically reactive metals than aluminum. Aluminum binds strongly with oxygen-based compounds, such as phosphate groups in ATP, needed for the production of energy. In simple terms, too much aluminum in the body reduces our energy. That's awful nice of them. They're so nice, these people. Human exposure. Oh, can somebody look up for me before the break what makes glitter up? What is glitter made of? I guess that's what I want to, because I want to pass something to Annie, and then she can pass it on the chat. I uploaded a video to Rumble today, and I want to pass it to Annie. She can pass it to everybody else. Human exposure in the 21st century is especially high. Aluminum is in most public tap water. It is used as a flocculant to clarify the water, and it is just discharged from fertilizer and aluminum manufacturing. Jet engines spew aluminum ions into the air, particularly problematic from those living in the flight paths of major airports. Aluminum compounds abound in toothpaste, mouthwash, soaps, skin care products, tanning creams, cosmetics, shampoos, hair products, deodorants, baby products, nail polish perfume, food, food packaging, sunscreen, and acids, and buffered aspirin. Aluminum levels are especially high in infant formula, particularly soy formula. Aluminum leaches into food from aluminum foil and cookware. Thanks, Mom. Another undisclosed source is marijuana. Users can absorb as much as 3,700 micrograms of aluminum per joint, representing a significant risk factor for neurodegeneration. Aluminum levels are especially high in the brains of those with Alzheimer's and autism. Alrighty, I think I'll stop for the break right here. It's really surprising that there's 8 billion people on Earth. Really, really surprising. They have to be astonished that just hundreds of millions of us haven't just keeled over yet. I'm sure they're quite. I'm sure they're wondering why. I'm gonna take about a 6-minute break here, everyone. So go get you a tea or a coffee or something. Be right back.
Too high, fell
because I can't eat.
Okay, somebody just sent me a message on Facebook. Andy, was that you? Just going back on air. I can't check right now, so I'll have to check later. But going to continue on. Okay, you could pass that little video in the chat there. People could take a listen at next break. It's only like a minute and a half long, something like that. Don't want them to listen while I'm reading. They can listen during the break. The body has a certain tolerance for aluminum. Beneficial gut flora can prevent its absorption, and a good immune system offers some protection against airborne aluminum. But the body lacks such tolerance for aluminum ejected into the bloodstream. Mercury may have been removed or reduced in vaccines, but not aluminum. In fact, manufacturers have added more aluminum in order to provoke the production of antibodies said to prove an immune response. All of the diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis vaccines, DT, DTaP, and TD, TDAP, and a combination vaccines with DTaP component. Haemophilus influenza type B, HIB, vaccine hepatitis A and B, and the hepatitis A B combination vaccines. The meningococcal and pneumococcal vaccines, and the human papillomavirus HPV vaccines contain aluminum. In fact, the newest HPV vaccine, Gardasil 9, recommended for teenage girls and boys, contains more than double the amount of aluminum than the original Gardasil vaccine. In 2011, distinguished immunologist Yehuda Schoenfeld and colleagues proposed the term autoimmune inflammatory syndrome induced by adjuvants. AZIA. A-Z-I-A. To describe the unusual immune medicated diseases of humans and animals that appear after injection with aluminum containing vaccines. ASIA manifests as vague and sundry symptoms. Symptoms: chronic fatigue, muscle and joint pain, sleep disturbances, cognitive impairment, skin rashes, and more. I have all those. Aluminum accumulates, and the more you put in the system, the more you have. When you inject aluminum, you inject it directly into the immune system. The researchers also noted that a person would have to eat 1 million fold higher aluminum to get the same level of injected aluminum adjunct at the level of the immune cells. Goodness. The amount of aluminum injected into babies via multiple vaccination exceeds anything that can be considered safe. A baby who receives a recommended 8 doses of vaccine at the 2-month checkup receives 1,225 micrograms of aluminum at once. Fully vaccinated babies received 4,925 micrograms by 18 months. The maximum allowable aluminum considered safe per day for intravenous parenteral feeding is 25 micrograms. Yeah, it's no wonder by the age of 3 they develop autism and all these other spectrums, whatever they can be. Flu shots given to seniors do not contain aluminum, but the multiviral shots contain mercury, and all flu shots contain contaminants such as formaldehyde and polysorbate 80. Those who received the flu shots in the United States during the 2017-2018 influenza season had a 36% increase risk of coronavirus illness. In northern Italy, a campaign to inject the elderly with new types of influenza vaccines took place in 2018-2019. And in June 2019, the Chinese instituted mandatory flu vaccines for all ages. We live in a toxic world. Add millimeter wave 5G technology to the mix, and illness is sure to ensue. Chapter 11, Mind, Body, and the Role of Fear. Scientists have made two grave mistakes in their centuries-long quest to understand the human mind. Once we see through these mistakes, a more realistic concept of the mind can emerge. It's important to understand the mind, what it is, and how it works, because the mind has a large role to play in the experience of contagion. In other words, if we don't explore the nature of the mind and come to the realistic understanding of how the mind operates, we will fail to understand the concept of contagion in general and the experience of COVID-19 in particular. This is because fear, hatred, and lies are key components of the pneumonia we call sickness. I'm sorry, not pneumonia. Phenomena. We call sickness. These negative emotions and behaviors seem to be contagious, and they are present in the world at almost unprecedented levels at all time. It's time to integrate the concept of the mind into a realistic framework for health and disease. I've heard for a long, long, well, since I've been researching that, I've heard that these people feed on our fear and our hatred. That's what they want the most is fear and hatred. Sometimes, you know, we just can't give it to them. The first mistake concerning the mind that scientists and researchers have made in past centuries is that the assumption that physical matter is the only thing that exists. If this is the underlying assumption, then it is only natural to look for a physical site in which this mind resides and then attempt to understand how the anatomy, the chemistry, or physiology of this organ's... Wait a minute. You got to go back here. I missed a little bit. Then it is only natural to look for a physical site in which this mind resides and then attempt to understand how that anatomy, chemistry, and physiology of this organ's cells create the mind. Scientists have localized the seat of the mind in the brain. They postulate that the brain is made of physical matter, chemicals, and atoms, and therefore these brain cells must somehow secrete the mind. The mind must be physical, biochemical, product of the brain, much as thyroid hormone is a physical secretion of the thyroid gland. But try as they will, they just can't come up with the chemical or group of chemicals that constitutes the mind secreted by the brain. As always, we are told it is just a matter of time, and of course, more funding, for scientists to solve this puzzle. Yeah, good luck with that one. This matter called the brain is either 99.99% empty space, if it exists as a particle, or just wave energy, if it exists as a wave. To complicate matters, these same scientists tell us that what determines whether the stuff that make up our brains is in the particle or wave form is how the mind of the scientist is observing the stuff. In other words, this mind, which can't be found, actually determines the form of the organ that is supposedly created the mind. Thus, the scientists are caught in the accordion knot, like a rat trapped in a infinite maze. There is no escape from this central dilemma. The result is that scientists try to understand more and more of the conundrum's details, while never getting to the core of the issue, that is the central paradox of the materialistic science, its offshoot, materialistic medicine. Most neuroscientists attempt to find the source of the mind within the organ that postulate is creating the mind, our brain. This is akin to attempting to localize the source of sound emanating from the radio by dissecting the radio into its component parts. Although the radio is needed to receive and play sound, no one could possibly think the sound originates in the radio. It does not. The radio is a receiver, and the more in tune it is from the various waves or frequencies in the world, the matter can function as a receiver. I just wonder something. I bet that just blows scientists' mind that twins can communicate with each other and think with each other. They can feel each other's pains, if they're hundreds or thousands of miles apart. They can think and talk to each other, communicate with each other. That's what I'm looking for. It just blows their mind because they can't open up the brain and find out where that part is. Where is this part? What makes these people do this? I've told everybody. It doesn't happen anymore because everything is digital, but when telephones were analog, you know, about four times in my life, I've thought about calling somebody and went to the phone to call them, and they were on the other end of the line. How does that happen? I know science can't figure that one out. Science can't figure out remote viewing. They can't figure out a lot of stuff, and they want to know, but they just can't. Because it doesn't fit inside their little box. A perfect radio would theoretically be able to pick up any radio wave signals anywhere. If it were powerful enough and tuned enough, different sizes and types of radios have different abilities to pick up various signals. No one claims that because one radio is small and old and picks up only local, strong signals, that the other signals don't exist. It's clearly all about the power and clarity of the radio one is using. So it is with the connection between the brain as the presumptive sight and mind. The brain is a receiver. It works in conjunction with the entire organism in a complete dance we call life. The body brings nourishment to the brain. It removes waste products from the brain. It connects the brain to the senses and to the fingers. So we can touch objects and provide the brain with the information it needs in order to work. There is no body-mind duality. That is a superstition of materialistic scientists. There is a human being divided up into various water components, each working together to create this experience we call life. Yep, it probably happened four or five times in my life, but it hasn't happened in like 25 years because everything is digital now. And everything is controlled. They can, you know, they can, they can control the digital, but they can't control the analog. That's the word I was looking for. And, of course, I lost my spot. The input to this experience, as in a radio, comes from the world. Actually, the universe as a whole. Our bodies with this respective minds are the receivers for this input in the form of electromagnetic waves. And since we know that every substance is also its own form of wave, there is a natural resonance created with when the energy of the world meets an organized water crystal known as the human being. The result of this resonance is output, otherwise known as thoughts, feelings, and actions. The mind is simply a made-up concept for this dance of life. Input from the world, received in the form of resonance by our organism, leading to the creation of output in the form of thoughts, feelings, and actions. The second mistake is failing to understand the role that that water in its crystalline nature plays in its resonance phenomena. One important clue that water is crucial element for the creation of this mind we call the human organism is that the organ that serves as a primary receiver of thought waves, the brain, is also the organ with the highest water content. It is 80% water by volume, about 10% higher than other organs. Not only is the brain the organ that has the highest amount of crystalline water, it also floats in organized, structured, cerebrospinal fluid, CSF, therefore achieving the remarkable feat of overcoming gravity. Without this salty CSF bath, the brain would feel too heavy to carry around. The brain would push against the skull, thereby cutting off its own circulation. Life is a manifestation of the force of levity. Plants grow up, sap rises in trees, and animals stand and walk. In contrast, mineral substances succumb to gravity. Life would be impossible if gravity ruled. In the human being, fortunately, the brain floats forward in its pool of salty, crystalline fluid. Levity, like a plant growing up towards the sun, is a basic expression of living beings. This organized water, known as the brain, floating in its bath of crystalline fluid, serves as a perfectly tuned receiver for the thoughts of the world. This is an exact description given by the most sophisticated scientists, inventors, musicians, artists, writers, and poets. Universally, they describe the experience of working on themselves in one way or another, thinking, practicing, studying, and then one day the inspiration or thought simply comes to them to become Newton's theories. Beethoven's Ninth Symphony or Isaac Singer's sewing machine. We have all had the experience of receiving a thought and knowing it is right, or having pondered a question for many years and suddenly receiving the answer. Yes, that's happened to me. Somewhere, somehow, thoughts, all these various wave forms exist. It's just a matter of tuning our watery brains to pick them up clearly. This brings us to COVID-19 and the experience of fear. Whether by design or by accident, humanity is currently bathed in the waveforms of fear, hatred, and lies. All by design, people. All by design. I told you that science has already studied the fact and written about it. Those in a state of fear cannot think correctly. And cannot think correctly or clearly. And I'm sure that anger and hatred and lies perform the same way. No sensible person could possibly deny this. People don't know whom to believe, which news report is accurate, which scientists or government officials are lying, or which are telling the truth. We have been told to fear and suspect each other as carriers of deadly germs. Any or all differences between us, even things as superficial as the color of a person's skin, are grounds for even more fear, suspicion, and hatred. It is not hyperbole to claim every single person on earth is now bathed in this sea of fear, hatred, and lies. This is what is picked up by all living organisms as a predominant waveforms in the world. Naturally, these waveforms create physiological responses in our bodies, such as activation of our inflammatory systems. As we attempt to rid ourselves of these destructive thought patterns, our cortisol production increases, adrenaline soars, blood flow constricts, and pupils dilate as we prepare to escape this danger. We have been poisoned, drowned in this toxic brew deep in our watery structures. We also know that exposing organisms to stimulants that create stimulates the creation of exosomes to detoxify this fear. Scientists have mistakenly labeled tiny bodies viruses, poisons. They are not pathogenic viruses. They are natural human responses to fear, lies, and hatred, and other toxins. Exosomes are nature's way of letting us know that unless we rid ourselves of these toxic thoughts, healthy life is not possible. Masks, social distancing, closing businesses, violence, and racial intolerance are just some of the forms of fear-inducing strategies in which humans are subjected. Human beings need love, trust, and acceptance to grow and thrive. These waveforms are out there as well. Our challenge is to learn how to tune into these good emotions rather than the things that bring illness and death. And that's a perfect place for the break. Next is part 3. Don't even have to mark my spot. Starting on a new page. So, for the last break, everyone, I'll play 2 short songs. Add up to almost 5 minutes, I guess. Be right back in a few.
Eternal, bright, and fair. When the slave of earth shall gather. worries cloud your mind with fear. Hold your head up high in the early by and by. All your troubles soon will disappear.
You can move that mountain. You can move that mountain. Don't wait till tomorrow.
Up your hopes and despair. You can find a way. Please believe in what I say. Troubles all will vanish.
Okay, sorry about that. I lost track of my mouse again, like it usually happens. Yes, it is. I like that song, Mom. Part 3, Choices. Chapter 12, Questioning COVID. As some people may remember, I had Dr. Cowan's son. Actually, I didn't have him on my show. He had me on his show. Before we even started anything, we just talked on the phone, and he asked me what I thought from the beginning of this plandemic. And I said to him, I knew it was a load of crud. I just didn't know how to prove it. I knew it was a load of crud from day one. I just didn't know how to prove it. The proof came out, you know, within a couple of weeks, virtually. So I do have contact with Dr. Cowan, and I'm trying to get him on sometime. Maybe after reading this book, which is only going to be about 2 or 3 weeks away. So I got to email him after I get done tonight. See what happens. Chapter 12, Questioning COVID. The first cause of illness attributed to this contagious organism called coronavirus occurred in China in November 2019. The illness appeared in the United States in January 2020. By the end of June, halfway through the year, health officials could cite 10 million cases with 500,000 deaths worldwide. The official numbers of the United States are about 2.5 million with 126,000 deaths, or a death rate of 5%. The official cause, person-to-person transmission of a novel form of a type of virus called coronavirus, an organism listed in textbooks as causing mild upper respiratory symptoms or the common cold. Officials and the media have studiously avoided mentioning any possible connection with the stealthy installation of 5G antennas. First in large cities and then in smaller towns, these antennas are deliberately inconspicuous, hardly noticeable on city streets. Well, I think I told everybody that I seen crews putting them up. And they claimed that they were cameras, of course. I'm sure they were cameras with 5G transmitters. Also, a large portion of these deaths, 43% or higher, have occurred in nursing homes or long-term care facilities. The elderly are the most vulnerable, with an average age at death of 79 years. Nearly all victims have comorbidities such as obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, and heart disease, which means they are probably taking several toxic drugs like metformin for diabetes, ACE2 inhibitors for high blood pressure, and statin drugs to lower cholesterol. According to Silvio Brusafero, president of the Italian Higher Institute, Italian medical records indicate that there may be only two people who died from coronavirus in Italy who did not present other pathologies. Goodness. In the early days of the illness, many argued that the threat of coronavirus was exaggerated. In March, Stanford professor John Ioannidis claimed that health officials were severely overreacting to coronavirus, suggesting that the response to the coronavirus pandemic may be a fiasco in the making, because we are making seismic decisions based on utterly unreliable data. A report from March 9th, 2020, A report from March 9, 2020 shows deaths attributed to COVID-19 at 65 per day versus malaria at 2,000 per day and TB at 3,000 per day. Tuberculosis. Hardly a mortality rate that justifies pandemic status, especially as physicians report receiving pressure to write COVID as the cause of death on death certificates. Hospitals have ample reason to list COVID as a cause for admission. They receive $13,000 from Medicare when they list a patient labeled as COVID, compared to only $4,600 for simple pneumonia. If a patient is put on a ventilator, Medicare pays hospitals $39,000. These financial incentives made it easy to argue that COVID-19 incident and mortality rates were inflated. Early analysis of the death rate claimed a virtually non-existent increase in the number of U.S. deaths during the first 17 weeks of 2020 compared to the same period in 2019. But using more complete CDC data reveals over a 12-week period, February through April, COVID-19 claimed more lives than did accidents, smoke, diabetes, suicide, and other conditions. COVID-19 was third in the list of leading causes of death in the United States during the 12-week period. The overall U.S. death rate was 4 to 5% higher than it is in the same period in 2019. Some have claimed that COVID deaths are mostly iatrogenic, that is, caused by medical care patients receive and by the many toxic drugs they are taking. Typically, a COVID-19 patient receives an antiviral remdesivir and is put on a ventilator. Like AZT for AIDS patients, remdesivir was... Hang on a second here. Got three for me. Sorry about that. I need to find my spot again. Early in the days of the pandemic, the media reported a rush to produce enough ventilators. Oh, wait a minute. I guess I gotta go back from one particular page. Remdesivir was developed to treat another disease, hepatitis C, for which it did not work as hoped, and dusted off to give COVID-19 patients. Adverse effects include respiratory failure and organ impairment, low albumin, low potassium, low red blood cell count, low platelet count, gastrointestinal distress, elevated liver enzymes, and reaction at the site of injection. In the early days of the pandemic, the media reported to rush to produce enough ventilators to satisfy the expected demand for them. But the much-hyped ventilator turned out to be a death sentence. According to one analyst, among patients 66 years and older hospitalized in the New York region, those put on ventilators had a 97.2% mortality rate. In an April 22, 2020 article published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, an analysis of 5,700 COVID patients hospitalized between March 1 and April 4 found that the overall death rate was 21%, but it rose to 88% for those who received mechanical ventilation. That's interesting. I'm just getting a bite of something here. Sorry, hang on a second. Bad medical care was not the only factor that contributed to the high death rate. The other was almost certainly terror and loneliness. When tagged with a diagnosis of COVID-19, either from a purative positive test result or no test at all, patients often found themselves locked up against their wills in elder care facilities and shut off from the outside world. No visits from family or friends permitted. Although many argue that the rates of illness blamed on the coronavirus have been inflated, and that COVID-19 is no worse than a bad case of the flu, the possibility exists that the numbers have been underreported. Many suffer illness and never report it. Minorities and those living in poverty, but also those who mistrust the medical system, and we have no idea how many are really getting sick in China or in countries formerly of the communist world. The PCR tests give false positives, but also false negatives, which means that many may suffer from a mild form of the illness without a diagnosis. This last 8 or 9 minutes is going to go slow. I just know it is. I had a taste of that food, and it's pretty good. I'm going to get another taste. Most important, it is clear that symptoms of COVID-19 are not the same as those of an ordinary flu. Autopsy reports have found that the lungs of COVID victims contains microscopic blood clots, something that does not happen in flu patients. In larger blood vessels of the lungs, the number of blood clots is similar among COVID-19 and flu patients. However, capillaries in COVID-19 patients have 9 times more blood clots than those in flu victims. The capillaries are in the small air sacs that allow oxygen to pass through the bloodstream and carbon dioxide to move out. Actually, pathologists are finding clots in almost every organ. The damage, of course, is blamed on a wily virus. The novel coronavirus is a master of disguise and uses a number of tools to infect ourselves and replicate. According to Professor Mauro Gaiacha of King's College, London, COVID-19 often leaves lungs completely unrecognizable. What you find in the lungs of people who have stayed with the disease for more than a month before dying is something completely different from normal pneumonia, influenza, or the SARS virus. You see massive thrombosis. There is a complete disruption of the lung architecture, and some lights you can't even distinguish that it used to be a lung. There are large numbers of very big fused cells which are virus positive, as many as 10-15 nuclei, he reported. I am convinced this explains the unique pathology of COVID-19. This is not disease caused by a virus which kills cells, which has profound implications for therapy. The viruses, of course, are exosomes trying to remove toxins from the lung cells. But they are apparently no match for serious EMR poisoning, which seems to completely disrupt the structure of lung cells. A key symptom of COVID-19 is prolonged and progressive hypoxia, meaning that the body is starved for oxygen. This happens when the hemoglobin molecule releases its iron molecule. Unattached iron in the bloodstream is reactive and toxic, but normally iron is tucked away in the hemoglobin molecule. The iron is caged, so to speak, and carried around safely by hemoglobin. Vitamin C has an important role to play in cleaning up rampaging iron ions. And I have some venison loin here. That's what I'm eating. It's really good. Without the iron ion, hemoglobin can no longer bind to oxygen, so it cannot carry oxygen to the cells. Meanwhile, the released ion does its reactive damage everywhere in the body. Damage to the lungs shows up in CT scans. The kidneys release hormones like erythropoietin, which tell your bone marrow to ramp up production of hemoglobin. The conventional explanation for the release of iron from hemoglobin is the action of glycoproteins in the coronavirus. But the action of 5 millimeter waves, is an equally good explanation, especially those at 60 gigahertz, which disrupt oxygen molecules. An interesting observation about lung malfunction in COVID-19 patients is that it is bilateral, both lungs at the same time, whereas ordinary pneumonia typically affects only one lung. What kind of virus knows to attack both lungs? Yeah. It's cooked medium rare, Mark, and it's really good. Juicy. A study from the Wuhan showed that more than one-third of coronavirus patients had neurological symptoms, including dizziness, headaches, impaired consciousness, skeletal muscle injury, and loss of smell and taste. and more rarely, seizures and stroke. This is not your normal flu. This is a serious disease. Moreover, in late March, reports of COVID-19 deaths in infants began to appear. In the early months, the disease mostly afflicted the elderly, but doctors are observing an increase in the inflammatory system called Kawasaki disease, which afflicts children and teenagers, called pediatric multi-symptom inflammatory syndrome temporarily associated with COVID-19. It is diagnosed on the basis of symptoms. These symptoms include high fever, rash on trunk and groin, extremely red eyes, dry cracked red lips, and strawberry red swollen tongue, redness and an extensive peeling of the hands and feet, and swollen lymph nodes, severe abdominal pain and gastrointestinal symptoms, inflammation of the heart muscle, and markers of cardiac injury are other typical symptoms of Kawasaki disease. However, ironically, the overall death rate among children has declined during the pandemic lockdown for several hundred deaths per week to well under 500 by mid-April. And throughout May, a change attributed to persons not keeping their children up with the draconian vaccination schedules. Probably true there. Since remdesivir gave disappointing results, health officials are seeking other remedies. One suggestion is dexamethasone, a potential steroid that can shrink the brain. Dexamethasone makes sense if COVID-19 is an inflammatory rather than an infection. In fact, one of the first things medical students learn is that steroids like dexamethasone make infections worse. Since dexamethasone may make COVID-19 better, this demonstrates that the illness can't be an infection. Interesting. And I'm going to stop right there for the day, folks. Mark my spot and finish my venison loin, which is very, very, very tasty. So, let me see here. I guess only about a 3.5 minute song to end. So, thanks for coming out, everyone, and see everyone tomorrow, I hope. Or Roger and me.